from PRX.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, and friends beyond the binary, it's time for the podcaster who ideally will aerate your dreams and not your water, or aerate your thoughts so you can dream, or who later will be looking up the word aerate. Why? Well, it's time for Sleep With Me, the podcast that's here to put you to sleep. And when your hand hits the fridge tomorrow, don't forget these ways we keep the show going. Hey, everybody, this is Scoots, and this is where I talk about Sleep With Me Plus and supporting the show. I'm going to try to do this one pretty fast with a couple questions. This only goes out if you're a regular listener to Sleep With Me. So if you're new or the show is just something you listen to every once in a while, this is not important, really. But if you're a regular listener, the question is, does Sleep With Me help you at all, right? Does it help you in a unique way, like help you fall asleep or break up the thoughts or ease of loneliness in the deep, dark night? Distract you from physical sensations, whatever, does it do anything for you? And does the sleep you get or the relief you get make your life any better? And if the answers to those questions are yes, and you can afford to support the show, this is a time when I'm really asking people, hey, what would it be worth to you if we stopped making Sleep With Me? Like, would you pay to get it back? Like, you'd say, if Sleep With Me does make your life better by helping you get sleep, or it does help you in the deep, dark night feel less alone, or you just like it, and we stopped making it, I said, hey, would you pay for to get back? Like, how much would sleeping be worth to you? Say, hey, let's restart it. Let me put a quarter in the machine. What would what it does for you be worth to you to say, hey, I really want to get that back? And if the answer is like, hey, yeah, it would be worth $20 to me, or it'd be worth $50 to me, think about supporting the show at Sleep With Me Plus. Even, I mean, obviously, most people support it much less than that, because the show could really use your support right now, and we never have to cross that threshold. So if the show does something for you in a unique way, you like the podcast, and you can afford to support it, just don't wait. Sign up for Sleep With Me Plus, sleepwithmepodcast.com/plus, sleepwithmepodcast.com/plus. That's sleepwithmepodcast.com/plus. Thanks, everybody. Sleep With Me is also made possible by the hard work of Carl W. and Chris Posterson, who edit episodes. Chris also did our theme music. Jonathan Mann is on our songs. Lullabies at Jonathan. He's on our lullabies. He's our mystery bard. You could commission a song from him at song.jonathanmann.net. Kenny, Scotty, and Jennifer are on our artwork. Eric and the team at Astound are on our website. We're part of Night Vale Presents and PRX, and I want to thank everybody over there. You can check out all the great shows at nightvalepresents.com and everything PRX does at prx.org. I'm at Dearest Scooter on Twitter, but I think you're probably forgetting something. But you know who never forgets to be kind to one another are the listeners in the listener Facebook group. And they're moderated by example, by volunteer moderators, Laura and Stacy, Keith and Sarah, and Julie and Jennifer. And that's it. Let's get on with the show. Hey, are you up all night tossing, turning, mind racing, trouble getting to sleep, trouble staying asleep? Well, welcome. This is Sleep With Me, the podcast that puts you to sleep. We do it with a bedtime story. All you need to do is get in bed, turn out the lights, and press play. I'm going to do the rest. What I'm going to attempt to do is create a safe place where you can set aside whatever's keeping you awake, whether it's thoughts that are, you know, that keep coming up, physical sensations that are distracting you from sleeping, emotions that are bubbling up, whatever it is. It could be travel, a change in routine, a change in weather, maybe you work the second or the third shift. Whatever it is, I'd like to help. And what I'm going to do is ideally earn your trust by treating you with dignity and respect and making you feel welcome. I'm going to send my voice across the deep, dark night. I'm going to use a lulling, soothing, creaky, dulcet tones. Tones, not tomes. I don't think I've used tomes in the podcast before, so maybe I just crossed my fingers so I remember that, which I'll probably definitely forget. Creaky dulcet tones, pointless meanders, rustified tangents, I'm going to go off topic. I'm going to say I have a lot of, I don't have ums. I think I go, I do a lot of that when I open my mouth. I was never good at that as a kid when they'd say, hey, open your mouth. Open your mouth and say, ah. And I'd say, no, I prefer to say no, thank you. And they say, no, no, open your mouth and say, ah. I'd say, no, no, anyway, hopefully here you open your mouth and you say, oh, see if I could get a cheap sympathetic yawn out of you. I think I just sympathetically yawned myself, but don't I? This is a big point. These are the kinds of things that crack me up. Where was I, though? I think I lost where I was because I was so busy pandering to the part of me that thinks yawning's funny. Yeah, hopefully I'll remember tone. Oh, Creaky Doll said tones, pointless meanders. Filler words. Yeah, I use a lot of filler words. That's totally planned out, my use of filler words. But what I'm going to do is I'm going to try to keep you company while you fall asleep. If you're new, this podcast is a little bit different. It does not make a whole lot of sense. It's extremely goofy. It's extremely goofy like a goofy friend. So ideally, that's what you're looking for. Give it a few tries. Try to relax and not make a whole lot of sense of it. You don't have to do that, though. You can pay close attention, too. But I really want you to know I'm here to help, and I'm here to try to help. Let me help you by giving you the structure of the show. We start off with a few minutes of business. That's how we keep the show going. Then we have an intro. The intros are normally around 12 minutes, although they may be 10, 11, 17, 15, 16, 13, or 14 minutes with any kind of seconds in there. And it's a bit of a show within a show, a monologue heavy on the log part, for sure. A monologue that lands like a log in mud, you say, bump, lop. But really, it's where I try to make a metaphor about the podcast where you might be like, oh, that doesn't make any sense, that metaphor. Oh, okay, I think I get it. And some people use it to wind down the intro. A few people skip the intro. Other people fall asleep during the intro. Some people listen all night. And that kind of goes into my first point, is that you don't really need to listen to me. You can listen, and I'll be here till the end. To try to keep you company and to take your mind off of stuff. But you don't need to listen. Or you could just stop listening to me or slowly tune me out where I'm drifting further and further away. You can lower me to a mumble if you wish. But you don't have to pay close attention. I think that's what I was meant to say. Nothing like a tome. Also, when I say tome, I want to say Fanoni phone. That's another, I think I've given, that's like a Flavor reference. But so you don't really need to listen to me. And there's no pressure to fall asleep. I'm going to be here for about an hour to keep you company, to be your boar friend, your boar bae, your boar bud, your boar cuz. If you're in the San Diego region, your Barbara. Whatever it is, I'm going to be here to keep you company because I've been there tossing and turning. And sleepless, and it feels as heavy when you can't sleep. It feels as heavy as a tome. And a tome to me, T-O-M-E. I don't know if you should. I don't think you should ever get in bed with a tome. I mean, maybe if you're a gnome, then you do. Like, I guess you could see a gnome with a tome. A gnome in tome. A gnome in Rome carries a gnome with a tome in Rome. Come on, throw me a bone. That doesn't rhyme. But it's, because a tome to me seems heavy, it seems dusty, and it seems like it's got that cover. Could have some runes on it, and you say, okay, what's going to happen when I open this tome? Or if you're an assistant to like some sort of sorceress or sorcerer, they say, you know, after you're finished mopping, make sure to read that tome. But not the tome with the blue binder, you know, the tome with the pea green one for novices. But you're not even, you know, and they say, make sure you know that tome by heart. And it's, well, actually, I'm sorry, Lady Witchbeard. I'm going to try to get some sleep tonight. Actually, I've been mopping all day. They say, what kind of, you know, magic assistant are you? And I said, well, this actually happened when I took gymnastics class. I don't know if I ever said this on the podcast, and this is a total tangent. But I think if I ever did live in a hamlet somewhere, where in a world where tomes were regularly used, and I, you know, my parents said, well, we want you to go live with Lady Witchbeard. You said you wanted to be a magic user, and she's, you know, the one that, you know, if you're her assistant to her assistant, one day, you know, she'll school you in the arts of sorcery. This same thing would happen, which was like, I took a gymnastics class. I signed up for like the introductory. My parents signed me up, but I don't know how old I was. But I had probably just watched the Olympics, and I said, Mom, Dad, I got the Olympic spirit in me, and I want to be a gymnast. And so they signed me up for a gymnastics class, and I went, and I remember the first day we were, a lot of the details are hazy, but we were, what's that thing called? The horse, the pommel horse, or the one where you jump over it. All we would do is we were running and then jumping on the thing. And I remember pulling the person aside, and I'm not usually like this, but I said, well, when are we going to be springing off of that thing and flipping? When's the flipping start? And I said, listen, I'm going to go get some water. When I can start flipping, how many flips will I be able to do after the first class? And whatever the answer the person said, and I was serious too. I said, well, I expect to be doing some sort of, one of those, you know, corkscrews, triple corks. Like, is this where I do axles and sow cows, or is that in, because I think I want to be able to do that in the winter. But I thought this was called vaulting, not running and stepping on a spring thing. And they sighed, and they said, whatever they said, yeah, you won't be doing anything for like 6 months. And I said, okay, well, life lesson, I guess this isn't the gymnastics class for me. And then my parents said, well, you know, the first lesson's free. I think they probably learned that. So that was a good life lesson for them. Is don't buy the year package, which hopefully they didn't do. I don't know what my point was. I mean, I think, like, I wonder if any gymnasts have done, one, is there a world where gnomes are doing gymnastics? Of course there are. Is there a world where tomes are doing gymnastics? Of course. Are there tomes on gymnastics featuring gnomes? Probably. And this podcast can be a bit like that. If your brain works like mine does, kind of, is like, why haven't I made progress? Why isn't this instantly happening? I'm sure that night I probably said, I mean, I'm sure the night before my gymnastics class, when I was paging through my imaginary tomes about my gymnastics victories at the upcoming Olympics, I was thinking about, well, by this time tomorrow, I'll be able to do a double axel or some sort, you know, I'll be tumbling, I'll be rumbling, and that's it. All my problems at school, this is really how my brain works. I said, that's it. After this first gymnastics class, I'm going to be on easy street. And then I'm sure the next night after, I said, well, so I checked off my list. I said, okay, gymnastics didn't fix everything. What could be the next thing? Chemistry set was probably the next thing on my list. But they can kind of leave you tossing, turning, at least for me, to be like, huh, what is this? They think they call it all or nothing thinking or fantastic. I guess what it comes down to is whether you're a kid or an adult, it's not easy. And sometimes you have ideas, and sometimes you have, this episode will have a little bit of a visit from my internal critic, a short visit, where you see, well, how come it's hard to get ideas out sometimes? What prevents them from getting out and breathing and seeing what they're like, and that kind of pressure that we can put on ourselves And for me, I would love the honor of being able to relieve some of that pressure for you by just coming in, goofing around like I do in these intros, and then tonight kind of telling you a little bit of a story. It takes place in beautiful downtown Oakland, California, and even features a visit from a challenge coin. So if that sounds good, just see how it goes. If you're new, give the show a few tries. Like the reviewers, literally 90-something percent of them say, it took two or three times till I realized the show was not meant to be taken seriously and I could just kick back and enjoy it and fall asleep. And if it doesn't work for you, you know, I like, there's some cool things on LibriVox. There's other things. There's Shipping News is another podcast. You could check out the Shipping News. So that's something to check out. But I don't know. I guess like I'm here to help. Whether you're a gnome, a tome, or, a kid gymnast or a kid that went to one gymnastics class, I believe you deserve a good night's sleep. And I'd like to help. I appreciate you coming by. Not only do I wish it, I yearn and I strive to help you fall asleep. Thanks so much. And here's a couple of ways we keep the show going. All right, everybody. I want to thank Claritin, tonight's sponsor, for supporting this episode and providing me with some samples. You know, I suffer from seasonal allergies. Not only do they get in the way of me living my life, they get in the way of me making this podcast to put you to sleep. Because when those allergies are really kicking in, I sound weird and I do not feel good at all. Luckily, for those of us who live with the symptoms of allergies, we can live Claritin Clear with Claritin D. The double action combination of prescription strength allergy medicine and the best decongestant available relieves sneezing, a runny nose, itchy and watery eyes, an itchy nose and throat, and sinus congestion and pressure with ease. And that's what I like about Claritin D. It covers all those bases. For me, I love the relief from the runny nose and the sinus pressure. Holy cow. Those two things combined, I'm like the worst two symptoms I have at the exact same time. So I love the relief Claritin brings. And I've been taking Claritin D this spring for this allergy season. And it's been a game changer because I can go out on my runs and on my trail runs and not have to worry about, am I going to be able to record the podcast tomorrow because my nose is running and my sinuses are clogged? Ready to live life as if you don't have allergies? It's time to live Claritin Clear. Fast and powerful relief is just a quick trip away. Find Claritin D at the pharmacy counter. Ask for Claritin D at your local pharmacy counter. You don't even need a prescription. Go to Claritin.com right now for a discount so you can live Claritin Clear. Use as directed. Thanks, everybody. Support for Sleep With Me comes from Odoo. If you feel like you're wasting your time and money with your current business software, or just want to know what you could be missing, then you need to join the millions of other users who switched to Odoo. Odoo is the affordable all-in-one management software with a library of fully integrated business applications that help you get more done in less time for a fraction of the price. To learn more, visit odoo.com/withme. That's odoo.com/withme. Odoo, modern management made simple. Hey everybody, so tonight's a little bit it's not a different episode, it's a format we've done before, but with someone new. And this episode is going to be a little bit interesting, and hopefully I can time it with a crossover with something else that's cooking in the pot. But, you know, someone, ideally you've listened to this podcast and you're subscribed to 99% Invisible. And I just wanted to take a second to talk about Roman Mars. And actually, I just read the bio right from his site, who's the host of a 99% Invisible radio show, a short radio show, and a podcast, and a worldwide phenomenon. So I already went off track there with the bio. With over 300 million downloads, 99% Invisible podcast. Oh, whoops, I already went off. Sorry, Roman. It's a short radio show about design and architecture, also a podcast with over 300 million downloads. One of the most popular podcasts in the world, in not just in numbers, but in people's hearts. Fast Company named him one of the most creative people in 2013. He was on the TED main stage in 2015. So you can check out both those out. I'll link to those. It's currently the most popular TED talk about design. 5 million views, over 5 million views at this point. His crowdfunding campaigns have raised over $4 million, and he's the highest funded journalist in Kickstarter history. He's also a co-founder of Radiotopia, a collective of groundbreaking independent podcasts. And I guess he's a shining example how to do something of incredibly high quality podcast, but also of how to, he just sets a wonderful example. And there's a lot of stuff that people don't see in of raising other people's voices, of really working with people that are going to be making radio and podcasts for the next 4 or 5 decades. And just someone I really look up to, I really respect, and I don't want to heap on the praise because it's you know, this is like a double awkward vulnerability. But I do tend to this goes off the rails really fast. But I do tend to fantasize every once in a while about pitching Roman Mars, and I don't know, every once in a while I'll say, huh, how come have they done 99 PI about that? And most of the time it's like, oh, they have. I just missed that somehow. Oh, first of all, if you haven't checked out 99% Invisible. It's ostensibly a show about design and architecture, but really it's a bit about everything. So do yourself a huge, huge favor. Listen to that during the day. And what kind of triggered me recording this episode was Roman and I were having a conversation because his voice sometimes, like, people repurpose it because it's buttery. I would say his voice is like a melodious butter. Also, I'm going to patent that too. Maybe we should do that. Maybe we could go into business together with that. Is like, you know, they have greeting cards with melody in there. Here's a butter company. If you're looking for a rebrand, Melody Butter, like a song in your, you know, like a song in your mouth. We'll work on the subtitle, but we could sell that and Melodious Butter, the butter that comes with a melody. And it could be like we could do a different ones, like, hey, just one pad only, Bob, you know, watch your butter, and, you know, whatever. Anyway, just an idea. So I went off topic because we were having a conversation about how people have repurposed audio to fall asleep, like 99 PI, because of Roman's voice and it's just his calming presence. And I really think it's more than that. It's like this deep curiosity that resonates with people, and this is that there's these wonderful things in the world worth exploring. Like, huh, why did they make this choice, or how did that end up this way? So it's I don't think you could put Human Condition in there, but you just listen and subscribe. But so we're having a conversation about that. And I've always thought about ideas I would pitch Roman on, like I said. But then my critic gets in the way, and I said, well, I don't know, Drew. And recently, like, actually, before we had this conversation, I was thinking of this one subject. And I was like, I said, well, they haven't done a 99 PI about this subject. And I don't know if anybody has this happen to them, where you think of an idea. This is always a balance of that you need to strike sometimes. You have an idea, and at first you say, oh boy, this is rock solid. I mean, it felt like a kid in the newsroom. I said, this story's going to, maybe a person with a cigar. And I said, this is a great idea. Then my critic, like 2 hours later, said, huh? I said, well, I wonder why they haven't done a story about this. And my critic said, because it's boring. And I said, really? And so the idea was like carbon, sparkling water, seltzer water. So I thought maybe I could get through, because then I said, well, I'm never going to get past my critic to Roman. Like, it's like, what do they call those? A door person, preventing me. And I said, well, maybe my critic's right. Maybe I should say yes. So he said, before we can pitch Roman, let's pitch my critic on like carbonated water. So let's do a tiny bit of research. And by tiny bit, I mean going to Wikipedia. And let's just see what's on there. It's a fizzy water. Carbon dioxide gas under pressure has been dissolved in there, either by technology or by natural geologic source. And many kinds of water are carbonated. Mineral water, club soda, sparkling water, also called seltzer water in the U.S., tonic water, and soda water. Typically, they can contain dissolved minerals such as potassium bicarbonate, sodium bicarbonate, or potassium sulfide, which are meant to enhance its flavor. Though sparkling water is just carbon dioxide with nothing else. Tonic water contains whatever, I can't say that word, quinine or whatever. That gives it that little bitter taste. And carbonation is what makes the water effervescent. Now, here's where we get into the history. The first person to aerate water with carbon dioxide, according to Wikipedia, was William Brownrigg in 1740, though he never published a paper on it. It was also independently and accidentally invented by Joseph Priestley in 1767. The great-great-grandfather, Jason Priestley, but my imagination just said. I wonder what would carbonate, maybe they'll talk, okay, he discovered a method of infusing water with carbon dioxide after suspending a bowl of water above a beer vat at a brewery in England. He wrote of the peculiar satisfaction he found when drinking it. I can agree with that. And he published, this is, you can't make this up, 1772, a paper, Impregnating Water with Fixed Air. Later, he was like, no, I'm just kidding. I can only imagine if I wrote his fictional autobiography. Priestley's apparatus, played by Jason Priestley, by the way, in the movie version. Priestley's apparatus, which featured a bladder between the generator and the absorption tank to regulate the flow of carbon dioxide, you know, was soon copied. And it wasn't until 1781 that it began to be mass-produced by a company specializing in it. The first factory was built by Thomas Henry in Manchester, England. And Priestley's regarded as the father of the soft drink. Which maybe he may live in infamy, not just for impregnating water. He did, however, receive he didn't make any money, of course, off of it. That never happens. He did get some recognition, though. In 1772, the Council of the Royal Society rewarded him with the Copley Medal. So let's see if there's any other history here. There's And I don't know, this may not, that was one of the things I thought about. And I was like, okay, that doesn't exactly help our case yet. Because I was thinking, I mean, at least there's some interesting is there. But I said, okay, not for 90, and it's like we need a little bit more juice for the story. Or maybe that it's nested in some other issue. And there is the whole idea of the soda taxes and all the companies getting into the sparkling water business. But I had been thinking about seltzer water. And when I think about seltzer water, for some reason, at first I picture my dad, and I think he didn't drink seltzer water, but I think of I think of my parents' generation as being the seltzer generation. And at first you might find that strange and probably with good reason, but I would say my generation is probably the soda generation. And ideally after us, it'll be, I don't know, will it be the bubbly, hopefully it'll be a bubbly generation, like a positive, empowered bubbly, but also for, you know, drinking bubbly water. Maybe it'll just be, I don't know, maybe at some point in two or three generations, people will start just absorbing water from the air. I don't know, like, where we're at in the evolutionary timeline. But my mind immediately went to seltzer water, and particularly seltzer bottles. Because when I was a kid, I watched a lot of Three Stooges, Laurel and Hardy. and in other comedy like that, even though it was repeats or whatever. And I'd say like 45% of the gags on those shows, the physical gags, involved a seltzer bottle, which was a big glass bottle that contained carbonated water. And you could shake it up, and then it was like a cool, high-powered, bubble-powered, carbon dioxide-driven squirt gun for adults. And what would inevitably happen, in a good way, was that there would usually be like a Monopoly Man-type character in a tuxedo, just like the Monopoly Man is, making, some sort of hubbub about something. And a lot of times what the Stooges would probably be working there as caterers, and they're supposed to, they were probably supposed to be working as caterers for some other scheme that Mo had. And what would happen is, usually Larry would get his fingers caught in a lobster crab claw, and then Mo and Curly would have some sort of disagreement right at the height of, maybe this was a Monopoly Man running for office. He said, I've made all this money, really means I know what I'm doing, blah, blah, blah. And what would happen is Mo would actually go to get Curly with the water, and Curly would dive out of the way, and Mo would spray the politician with the seltzer, who would make one of those sounds that, so you should watch this. This stuff's all available, I think, to stream somewhere. And then the person would say, they'd make a blubbering sound after they were sprayed. And then they would call, they'd say, remove them from my presence. And also other things that would happen would be then the lobster would be on Mo's nose eventually. Then they'd have more, other seltzer bottles, and it would kind of go from there. And what's my point? I don't know. I just went off and went on. I was thinking about these seltzer bottles, and I said, okay, critic, if you won't let me get to Roman with seltzer, what about the story of the seltzer bottle? And then my critic said, it's Soda Siphon, by the way. And I said, oh, look at this very light Wikipedia article. A soda siphon or seltzer bottle is a device for dispensing carbonated or soda water. Introduced as early as 1790, according to Wikipedia, in France, it's self-pressurized carbonated beverages. And in 1829, two Frenchmen patented a hollow corkscrew that could be inserted into a soda bottle, and by use of a valve, allow a portion of the contents to be dispensed while maintaining pressure on the inside of the bottle. They were popular in the 20s and 30s, which would say before my dad's generation. A lot of it, great job. WW2 actually was what led to the decline of the popularity, though the bottles are still used. Commercial production and delivery of pre-filled seltzer continued in Southern California and in the East up until 2009. And such delivery continues in Argentina, Vienna, Austria, and Toronto, Canada. For making single-use sealed bottles, I think one of the things I always thought of was that they weren't single-use. They never seemed like they were single-use, that they were recycled, just like recyclable milk when they came in glass. Yeah, commercially refillable bottles at a seltzer plant. And that's really all the Wikipedia article has. So that doesn't really do us any good. So then I was like, okay, well, my critic's never going to let me get this stuff out. How am I going to get past it? And then I said, okay, let's do some value. I said, well, you really got a great point. I don't know if there is a story here with the seltzer and the soda bottles. And I said, well, where's my attention go? Naturally, is back to the Three Stooges. And I don't know if the Three Stooges and Larry, Laurel and Hardy ever did any crossovers. They're fairly similar, but a little bit slightly different. And I think maybe generationally there was maybe a decade or two between them. But I'm, again, it's just based on assumptions. Sorry, Larry, Moe, Curly. I think Larry, Sue, Shemp, Laurel, and Hardy for making asses out of you and me. But another thing that inevitably happens in these movies, especially in these scenes where here's another question, an impossible, another business, is Three Stooges Catering. There must be a catering company called Three Stooges Catering. But when they're involved in waitering or catering, then there'll be a banana cream pie fluff, a fight with banana cream pies. And a banana cream pie, it was a big comedy thing. And since it's been kind of repurposed with shaving cream as both kind of a funny thing and also a way to kind of express displeasure in a more stronger way. But a banana cream pie was a pie that you would put in other people's faces, and they were very good at being thrown by the Stooges in these situations, because then usually, like with the Monopoly person who was giving the speech, we'll say, I don't know whose their name was. Just think of a familiar name up there saying, I've made my money, like I know what I'm doing. There would usually be a small class struggle, and the pie thing would help, play out the conflict. Oh, but I was trying to actually explain what a banana cream pie was. So a pie, you know what a pie tin is, right? And then there's a crust. I don't think it always had a crust, but I think in the Stooges it did. And it would make sense that it would have a crust because I think with its propulsion and its balance, in its delivery, it gives it a little bit more mass and it holds the banana cream together. But usually then it would be a layer of banana cream, which my understanding is very much like pudding or like a set custard, and then covered in a layer of whipped cream. And so if you've never seen, I'm sure if you search YouTube for banana, well, no, never mind. Don't do that, actually, because I don't know what'll come up. But there's a great article, actually, over at the New York Times that I'll just try to barely paraphrase and quote from by Dan Barry, July 8th, 2015, Comedy Sweet Weapon, The Cream Pie. And it talks about the history of film comedy and sweet pies and The Great Race, a 65 movie with Tony Curtis and Jack Lemmon. The Battle of the Century, 1927 Laurel and Hardy shorts, 3,000 pies thrown with slow burn precision. And Leonard Maltin once said it's a holy grail of comedy, talking about comedic shorts, because for several decades, quoting from the article, the 20-minute two-reel classic has been missing its second reel. Oh, the two-reel classic being the second half of the Laurel and Hardy short. And, this is really interesting, actually. So the second half of the movie has been missing. And so I don't want to ruin this article. This is so this could be interesting. So they could be there. But then my critic's saying, well, it's it's Dan Barry's business, Scoots, not yours. So then I said to myself, well, let's go to beautiful downtown Oakland, California, and let's walk around Oakland and try to get an idea of what we would do, because maybe there's not maybe I could pitch a fiction. What if there was a 99 PI, the almost nearly factual. Barely 99% fictional, 99% invisible. I don't know. I guess I'd have to think of the. So I got on a bus, 51A, the sweetest of the sweet for me, buses. And now a lot of people don't, I don't think anyone knows this except for my daughter. But I have made a challenge coin belt. And I was too scared to bring this up with Roman because of my basic design. And also he said, call me Mr. Mars, please. And I said, how do you feel about Mars bars? And he said, which brand? And I said, no, like, how do you feel about me calling you Mars bars? And it was a brief conversation we had. After that, it was curt, I would say. So I didn't get a chance to show him my challenge coin belt. And also, I guess I'm still a little bit feeling like, because it only gets to show off one side of the challenge coin. But it's it makes for a great belt buckle. But it's not exactly a high design, though. So that's another reason I said, let me keep it to myself, because I don't want Roman to say, how'd you make that? And I'd say, well, with magic. How else? But I did put on my belt. I said, okay, I have the belt. So I have the spirit of 99% invisible and Radiotopia behind me at my waist. I said, okay, that feels good. I'm not a superhero, but that'll help me. It'll give me like something to focus my extra energy on. And so I took the bus to a place right at down Broadway in Oakland to, I think it's like where the 16th Street BART station is or the 19th Street BART station. And this was a fateful intersection for the podcast and another thing with design. So I said, let me start there. I'll start walking around and talking to my belt like it's Roman Mars, and we'll figure out a pitch for the show. And I said, and I could call my belt Mars Bars. So we got there, and on the corner of that intersection is the old Sears building. And I don't know the history of it before. I think I have talked about it on the podcast. And I've always found Sears in these urban centers. So this was a Sears department store, and it stayed open in downtown Oakland, up until probably like 4 or 5 years ago when it was purchased to be converted into offices. And I don't think that worked out, and they're maybe converting it to offices or work live spaces now. But when I lived in the Bronx too, there was a right in the middle of the Bronx, right near where I studied, was a Sears as well. And so I have a soft spot for these Sears that I say, wow, they really, it's nice to have a department store. And it was an institution. It was there always. It wasn't there when things got hot and popular. It was there for people to go shop and say, well, I got to go to a wedding or whatever, or, I need to do some shopping for the holidays or things you'd buy at Sears. That's another podcast. But I can remember, so the whole idea of these urban Sears has always appealed to me. And I can remember standing there in the holiday season, either before I started the podcast or right after it, and thinking about the Sears and just feeling a connection to it in some way, because of its connection to its past, because of its uniqueness. And this was a really beautiful building as well. And I don't know, I just liked it. I said, I like the cut of your jib, Sears. Thanks for being here in at beautiful downtown Oakland, California. And in the Bronx, we're back on Fordham Road. So, and I think right around that time, not that long after, it was when I said, are you still listening to me? I looked down at my belt and I said, I think my belt is still listening. And I said, well, then I also found this blog or this Tumblr that was about JCPenney's its decline. It was just pictures from sad JCPenney or something it was called. And it would be pictures from JCPenney stores that weren't looking so great. And those two things were really the genesis for one of our longer running series, Get Bezos. Nothing to do with the character. It was three fictional characters, JCPenney, James Cash Penny, Richard Warren Sears, and another character, Jif. And so I've always had a great affection for that Sears. So that's why I wanted to start walking with you, Belt, here. I was thinking about talking to you. I know you specialize in like topics where that are well researched and kind of finding a way. I think the story is one thing. It was a great episode of How Sound, but that that's another podcast for people to check out. In nesting stories within one another. And I, you know, I'd love like but you know, I was just like thinking of the, you know, facts. I try to stay aware of facts and things, but I wanted to ask you, like, how do you feel about Tim Curry and Rick Moranis? And that's when there was silence from my belt. And you might ask, well, how do you know your belt was being silent? I said, well, because it wasn't sighing at every other thing I said. Or, like, it's strange, when a belt rolls its eyes, it makes a noise. I mean, mostly because my shirt was over it. So, you know, its body language has to be audible so that I know when it's doing these things. It helps keep me focused. And I knew I had, and I said, well, here's the thing. I said, what if I take you and I pitch, I don't just pitch Roman Mars, I pitch Tim Curry and Rick Moranis on an idea, and my belt was still quiet. So I started walking down towards Lake Merritt, and I said, okay, I'll do a couple of loops of Lake Merritt, the jewel of Oakland. And I started walking around the shores of Lake Merritt on a nice path there. Beautiful day, a lot of friendly smiles and waves, people jogging, people biking, people walking, people talking. And it's just surrounded by this beautiful string of lights, and worth it. Even if you're visiting, San Francisco, come to Oakland already. Go look at the old Sears building for 1 second that Scooter mentioned, and then go on. And then, so my belt said, okay, go on, tell me more. Tell me more about this idea you have. I said, so I'm thinking of seltzer bottles, right? And seltzer water. And the history of seltzer, which could be contained at the beginning of this podcast and not really get any, you know, foothold. But I think there's something more there, at least for me. And then I started actually picturing Rick Moranis propelling. This was probably not the tone of the comedy I was thinking of. But when you get Rick Moranis in your brain, you know, things happen. And I was picturing Rick Moranis with two seltzer bottles, super high. This maybe was more Wayne Szalinski, a character played by Rick Moranis, but with two seltzer bottles at each hip, and then launching himself into the air. And I heard my belt like make a non-negative shoulder shrug, and I said, "Okay, okay, Mars Bars, we might be onto something here." I said, I don't think that's a plot. I said, that was just a gimmick. But I think that would be the thing is, what if we find a way for Rick Moranis and Tim Curry? There's two ways we could go with it, okay? It could be competitive. They both own, because the only places, the best places to start a bespoke seltzer business, I'd say it would be Oakland or Brooklyn, maybe Portland, Seattle, San Francisco. But I said, you could Oakland would be a good testing ground for, you know, if it was just side gig and it could be bicycle delivered, seltzer, deposit bottles, recyclable. You could build a whole story into it. You could flavor it not with natural essences in quotes, generally known to be barely, you know how they do that. It could be with real essences. It could even be a storefront. No, okay, now we're on to something. I didn't even think about this. Because I don't know how I feel about Rick Moranis and Tim Curry competing with one another, except that maybe that would make it good reason, like Rick Moranis. This would be more of a used car salesman lot move, but that for promotion. So we could go back to that. We don't have to figure out the whole story right now. And right then I was passing Children's Fairyland of Oakland, which is a small amusement park, a fairy tale land for children. And I headed down around the fence for Children's Fairyland. There's a bandstand down there and a small beach and a fountain. And it was supposed to be one of those beautiful old bandstands. I don't know if it's made from concrete or stone. You see, and sometimes you just go there and there's a band playing on the weekends, like a big band or a smaller big band. And I stopped at the water and I was, you know, trying, because I was trying to think of the next idea for the seltzer water when I got down there. They said, okay, bike delivery, that would probably work too. It'd be tough in Oakland, like if somebody was in the hills or depending on stuff, but we could figure that out and we could partner. There's no reason to say it's 100% Luddite. It could be 90, it couldn't be 99% Luddite. But we could say, you know, delivered in this region by bicycle. Here's another, Tim Curry just called in with this idea, actually, to my brain. Delivered by bicycle or natural gas? Thank you, Tim. So maybe, I guess the idea would be that Tim, I guess it would have to do, we'd have to do a callback and say, what would Laurel Hardy, Mel, Shemp, oh, there's no Mel in those movies. Okay, Mo, Shemp, Curly, Sue, and Larry do. And I guess we'd have to put it, regular working wage earners versus, the big wigs, the investments. So I think they could be renting a store. I would love to put it at the Grand Lake Theater, one of the beautiful movie palaces in Oakland, which is lucky enough to have a few different movie palaces. The Paramount Theater and then the Fox Theater, which are both more performance spaces now, but you can still see movies at the Paramount, and I've seen Welcome to Night Vale at the Fox Theater. But so we, if we could get a store there in a window, Rick Moranis, and maybe Mars, maybe we could have Roman Mars be an intern or their next door neighbor, so we get you in the movie. But so they have a store there, or maybe no. I got a better idea. You're the behind the scenes creator of the essences. You've taken your knowledge of plants and chemistry, but in an organic way and through experimentation, you know, purely above board. Maybe some distillation and evaporation. I don't know what techniques you would use, but you're we'll figure out a thing to call it. But the, for now, this is a made up name, Essence Scientist. Oh no, Doctor of Essence. And you'll have a lab coat, of course. I've never seen a belt in a lab coat, but once we get this to Dr. Mars, the Doctor of Essence, or, and it could say Dr. Mars on the name tag. But so you would be working in the back, and Rick and Tim would be partners there, and they would be running this seltzer business. And I think we could also put it as like a, as we as a society also have to be open to the diversity of ages and the ability for people to reinvent themselves at different ages is like a tribute to rediscovering that you can also reinvent yourself wherever you are. Is that maybe their backstory that doesn't go in the movie is that this is like, they say, well, we don't want to retire. We love seltzer. You're right. Maybe there should be some, I don't like inciting incidents, but in this case, it would be, it doesn't even have to be in the story. Oh, is this a podcast episode? I'm sorry. I didn't know you could speak, Belt. I don't know. It's become a bit of a dreamy story. Tim Curry, Rick Moranis, they have the seltzer business. It gets a little bit better, and then we'll get, and not only that, I think on the weekends, they work something out with the city of Oakland because they have the Grand Lake Farmers Market on the weekends. I think it's on Saturdays there. And what they do is even when they deliver the seltzer, every bottle of seltzer, when it's delivered, comes with a banana cream pie. So I guess it's not exactly for everybody to be subscribing to this service. But they've also integrated themselves in all of the local restaurants and stuff. And, yeah, it's a big deal. I mean, even if it was like Rick Moranis and Tim Curry playing Rick Moranis and Tim Curry, I don't know. Maybe we do something different. Maybe they're both famous, like, I don't know, part of the most famous, like, Pavarotti. What was that? They were the two tenors before, earlier in life. Or they were the three tenors with, like, Steve Martin. Let's just say if Steve Martin would be interested in this, which is probably not likely. But I don't have a piece of clothing named, I guess maybe if I had a jacket, I would name it the Martin. But so, where was I? So another part of their business is that each delivery, or maybe something, or your first delivery comes with a banana cream pie. But then on Saturdays, or maybe one Saturday a year, you can come and they'll block off the street in front of the store and maybe you pay a nominal fee and you can get in a, there's like a some, you know, they've done all the, they know this is, you could eat, all you could eat banana cream pie, maybe not. But maybe like, okay, I got it. Each once a month during the one of the farmers markets, you get to throw banana cream pies at a politician, and all the money go. You buy a pie for $5, and it's sure it's a light pie. It you know totally hypoallergenic, all that, and each pie, you know, then all the money goes to charity. And it goes to 50-50, like 50% to local Oakland-based charities, another 50% to national causes, or and maybe like or maybe 50%, and maybe 20% goes, 10% goes to like a Three Stooges foundation, and 10% goes to a Laurel and Hardy one. I don't know about that part, or maybe like a film preservation. And maybe at some point, maybe this becomes a Goonies-like adventure. I don't know. This just took a turn on me. But what if that missing reel of tape is also a quest? Would that be, say, okay, save it for the sequel. Hardy har har, what does that hardy har har mean? Okay, so let's get back. So they have the store. They're a beloved fixture in the community. They have a beloved seltzer that's getting delivered door to door. And of course they say, well, it's not that they're anti-business. They say, hey, this is pretty nice. We just prefer doing it this way. Small scale, hand-batched. You know, sure, they're the butt of jokes. And maybe that's it. Steve Martin opens up one in Brooklyn. It's their East Coast operation. Or something. We could go with ideas for you know, fill parts in the movie. But so, and then also you get to spray the politician. Like after the politician gets pied, then you get to spray them off with seltzer. Like maybe someone wins that award or the MC, or that's like $300. Also, politician doesn't get any money. They just get free promotion, which is good. And then if they don't want to do it, they could use local podcasters. Not anyone that works in Oakland, though. People that like from Alameda, like Scoots. Actually, people could just throw pies at me if it's for charity, whenever they want. I mean, not when it's a surprise. And then that's another aspect of their business that they start to come up with, because they say, well, we need another revenue source. So what about surprise pies and seltzer with permission, like an opt-in? And mostly they do this at like the professional sports games, like the Warriors games. Where a Warriors player can do this for another one. And then at the interview, they get pied, which happens a lot at the Oakland A's games. And maybe they get seltzered too, to clean off the pie. And you say, well, that tastes pretty good. It's a little bit strange, carbonated banana cream pie in my mouth, but it's not bad, and it makes it easier to see. So that would be, you know, the good part of the movie. Like, maybe they have some ups and downs. Yeah, like they say, well, we're raising your rent. So then they come up with this idea of doing these things. I think my belt is asleep, too. But at some point, of course, we introduce the idea. Okay, my brain is going a little bit faster than even we need to. I think Rick Moranis is shooting through my brain. But so at some point, because Oakland is such a great demographic to serve, so rich in cultural heritage and diversity, that a big bottle company comes and they say, well, we're going to start our own delivery service. Maybe there's like a seltzer, you know, people are like, seltzer's even more popular than it is now. And they try to buy out, maybe, like, yeah, I guess this would be it. We'll go through this rather a little bit faster, but they make an offer, and to Curry, you know, Curry Mars, and it could be like they could say that at the door. What would we say? Curry Moranis and Mars. Maybe we could get Steph Curry just as like we don't need to do Space Jam, but that'd be pretty good. Curry, Moranis and Mars. Moranis, Mars and Curry. My belt doesn't. Mars, Moranis and Curry. Okay, I got you. My belt wanted that first. Mars, Curry, Moranis. Yeah, we could talk it out. And they make an offer on the business that they don't sell. They say, no, this isn't, we didn't get into the seltzer business for money. We got in the business for the love of banana cream pies and making natural essences, wearing lab coats. And also, you know, Rick dreams of launching, you know, creating a propulsion system as, you know, pretending to be Wayne Szalinski on Halloween. Really, it's just a string. That could be another thing. Okay, that could be it. That could be the strange turning point. So they go back and forth with the business. This is straight out of the, I think this movie might have come out in the 1980s anyway. And they say, well, we're going to buy it. The Monopoly Man from the Three Stooges movies. Only in the Three Stooges movies. Never heard of anyone like that. But he's making offers, trying to get them to sell. They won't sell. So then what happens is they're going to have a big Curry, Moranis and Mars, or they're going to have a big fundraiser for Halloween. And Rick, they put a crane up hidden on the roof of the Grand Lake Theater. And Rick pretends to be shooting off like with seltzer rockets, but really it's just a trick, an illusion. But the crane accidentally cracks the roof of the theater. And I guess maybe there was a scene where Tim and Roman were like, Rick, don't do this. It's too spectacular pretending like... Because maybe Rick's the one feeling the pressure. Like, we have to do something big in order to counteract the PR campaign from Big Water. And so the theater's damaged, and they say, okay, I guess maybe was this the plot to Breaking 2 Electric Boogaloo? So maybe this is an accidental reinvention of that. But what happens is the theater gets damaged, and... The theater, turns out, didn't have the insurance, or because of the preservation, they said, well, we can't afford to fix the theater. We got to fix the roof before the rain comes. Also, they say, Rick, you got to pay the bill because you didn't have a permit to be fake seltzer launching into space. And that would be good because then we could find an emotional thing where Rick was, and we could do a scene with Rick walking around Lake Moranis, Lake Merritt, but so Big Water comes in, and they're going to fix everything. They're going to fix the theater. They're going to buy the theater, and they somehow, you know, they make a deal. They say, okay, well, you know, if you give us your business, we'll fix the theater, and maybe something else that they need. I don't know what else they could I don't know what else Roman Mars, Rick Moranis, and Tim McCurry could possibly need. But if we fictionalize it, we could come up with one more layer. It's, you know, some emotional layer. And so then they say, okay, well, I guess this isn't fully formed, but they say, no, no. And maybe it even splits the three of them up. Like, yeah, I think that's probably good. And that they each are 33% stake. And maybe Rick's like so down that he says, I don't, you know, I just want to fix this. And I don't know who would be, the one that would say, okay, let's just sell. And it's a 66-33% split. So they say, they're going back and forth. Should we give up? Should we give this over to Big Water? Especially Tim and Rick are like, yeah, we're just trying to like enjoy this season of our lives. So something happens. And then what's always works in this movie, especially with the tradition we're trying to call back to, I guess it could be, we could just shoehorn the sequel right in there. Rick comes back with the second reel of the movie. Everything's fixed. No, that's not good enough. Okay, my belt said that's not good enough. Okay, so actually what they could do is they could have the giant fundraiser. That's what that's the other thing. And they could get celebrity, like they go, it goes viral. And maybe they, no, how about this? They say, if this could be, I don't think I've seen Space Jam. But what if there's like Steph Curry was in it? Let's back it up. And they say, okay, this is the board of directors of our company. We can add one other player and we'll play each other in basketball for this whole thing. The theater, the seltzer business, the essences, the Dr. Mars, the scientist jacket or lab coat. I'll even throw in my belt. Oh, no, my belt doesn't want to be thrown in. Okay, so there's a basketball game. It has to be the board of directors or the owners. And they say, okay, yeah, we'll just bring our board of directors, right? And so then they show up for the basketball game with all of the players, the Warriors have, I guess this probably would only work as like one. Maybe we could do this, like, each market, the movie changes. We film this, like, scene 1,000 times. But, you know, they show up with, like, the CEO of the company who has to play in the game, the COO, who is also a character in the movie we never identified or created yet, or the story, and then, like, James Harden, Russell Westbrook, and then I don't know who the third player would be. Like, whichever players get the Warriors fans the most going, definitely those two. I mean, personally, I like Joel. Personally, I like to see Joel Embiid in there because I think he just has a very, long-term high side, and he's pretty funny. But you could have LeBron. That would be star power. You could even have MJ. Maybe they can have a bench and they have like LeBron and MJ and Joel Embiid. Maybe Steph. I guess we could get for our team, we could get Ryan Coogler. I don't know if he plays basketball. Maybe he'd want to make, I don't think he'd want to make this movie either, but since he's one of the most successful directors in the history of the world. So maybe not, but we could get, but I guess we'd have like Marshawn Lynch and Damian Lillard on the team. Maybe Tom Hanks would make an appearance. Maybe another thing I was thinking is like maybe Rick Moranis isn't there for this. He's gone. So they haven't been able to vote or something. Or the I don't know. We could figure that out. Yeah, you're right. You're right, Belt. Also, I'd like to see something with the Tribune Tower, like maybe Avery and from 99PI and Claude Neon are up there. Maybe they're doing a game, like a play-by-play commentary. So okay, so there's the big game, And of course, I don't know what happens in the game, but like the Monopoly team, Team Tower, whatever you want to call them, they end up winning, or maybe they almost win, or maybe it's like some sort. I think we have to have a banana cream pie seltzer battle, of course. And then maybe I would think that another good way to finish it is like that Rick, who's been down. Maybe Dr. Mars has invented an actual, like, so last, there's like the clock ticking down. They've legally somehow in the rules had a huge banana cream pie fight so that no one could get to the basket anymore. Like, because they said, oh, well, we, yeah, of course we have James Harden and there are no rules or something. And so they said, fine, we're going to have a giant banana cream pie fight. They're up and, or it's a tie game. And then there's a seltzer fight at the same time. And then Rick Moranis comes and he's down. And they say, Rick, we need you. We can't. And then Roman, Dr. Mars, says, I've finally perfected the propellants, you know, for a new way to power scooters to get on your nerves and ride around. But I think it'll work for you, Rick. And he throws the seltzer bottle to Rick Moranis. And Rick Moranis, you know, grabs the ball that was in the air going to the basket, but not on its way down to win for the other team. And he grabs it, launches himself with the seltzer. Maybe he already did. And, of course, dunks the ball. Timer expires. Everyone cheers. Then there's even more pie fighting or something. And then there's that moment in almost every imaginary pie fight I've imagined where everybody starts to lock eyes because they're overcome in the moment. The moment, the heady scent of banana cream pie has consumed them. The physical joy of pressing down on a silver stainless steel lever and launching seltzer. You know, it's fired them up, and everyone's like exhausted from physical exertion of pie throwing and basketball and laughing, and people just start to put their arms around each other laughing, and that's it. Then the billionaire says, you know what, you know, sign me up for giving all my money to everybody that needs it, and let's do this thing. I've never felt more alive. And I guess that would be how it would end. I mean, but then I think my belt has drifted off here. It was a challenge, putting this challenge coin to sleep, walking through Oakland, California, beautiful downtown Oakland, California. And, you know, I hope everybody's resting. I want to thank everybody at 99PI, Roman Mars, Radiotopia, PRX, all my friends there, and everybody at Night Vale Presents. I want to thank Sears because without Sears, I wouldn't have had, I probably wouldn't have a podcast, to be honest. And JCPenney, whoever made that Tumblr or blog about sad JCPenney's or whatever it was called, I can't remember. Wikipedia, Dan Barry at the New York Times, all resting together. Larry, Mo, Shemp, Curly Sue, Curly, Laurel Hardy, Ryan C, Dame, Steph, Marshawn, Russell, LeBron, Michael J, James Harden, and did I have any other? Oh, Joel, of course, Joel. I'm tucking you in the most because you're just a cute. You know, I know you don't want to hear this, but your fierceness is the cutest in the NBA. So let me tuck you in here. With these special, and I'm only tuck you in too. I forgot you were here too. let me tuck my shirt into you, my belt, but everyone else, you know, get comfy. The scent of banana cream pie is on the air. It's that warm baking scent. You're calm. You're settled, just like you were in that. Your muscles now are relaxed as you sink deeper and deeper into sleep with that, you know, calm, placid look on your face. And you could see again a slow motion of Rick Moranis dunking. You could see that he has leg warmers on or those striped socks pulled up high, headbands, wristbands. And, of course, he's propelled by a ultra-powerful bottle of seltzer. And good night. I want to say thanks, you know, for some support on PayPal. I want to thank Sasha and Sherry and for supporting the show on PayPal. And over on Venmo, I want to thank Anya, who hopefully made it through the finals, and Joan for supporting the show on Venmo. And then I want to thank everybody who reviewed the show on Apple Podcasts, CityView11, who said, very effective and fun. I would greatly recommend this podcast. If your mind is racing and not allowing you to sleep, the perfect podcast to listen to. You just relax and listen to Scooter's calming voice, even when I could fall asleep just fine. This is a pleasant way to fall asleep. It might take a few tries, but it's worth it. And then Anti-Matters, another podcast, I guess. Love it. I fall asleep every night. This podcast, I have no idea what he's talking about. E.L. Malloy says, helps a veteran in my life. I haven't listened to many of these, but I know they're bound to become a regular in my home. My partner is a veteran. And these are the kind of ones that are really touching. My partner's a veteran after being home for 5 years now. It still deals with a lot. And I discovered this podcast a few nights ago. It's definitely helped put them to sleep faster and more peacefully. Thanks, Scooter. Also want to thank 72EMCD, who says they deal with a lot, and this is a one non-prescription thing that allows them to sleep consistently. Thanks, Scoots. Thank you. Dog Mom says without it would be tough to sleep without sleep with me. And Nullity says that kind of rhymes. It makes me want to sing like a Will Smith song or something when I say Nullity. I don't know why. Can't sleep without it in my sleep phones. Not only just at work, but at nap time, at lunch. So this is a few people I wanted to thank. Thank you so much. If you want to review the show on Apple Podcasts, just open it up in your app and search for Sleep With Me or on iTunes on your desktop. Thanks, everybody, and good night. All right, everybody, this is Scooter. This is Weeks in Review. And this is where I run through my weeks in review stuff. What was on Sleep With Me Plus in the past month, and what you can expect to see on in the public feed too. Now I have if you sign up for Sleep With Me Plus or you're already signed up for Sleep With Me Plus, I highly recommend using a podcast app that allows search within the feeds, but using just one podcast app for Sleep With Me Plus content only, and then keeping your other podcasts, your daytime podcasts, in whatever app you use now. And I would just check out a couple podcast apps you could choose from on Apple are Overcast, iCatcher, Pocket Casts, and on Android you could try out Pocket Casts or Podcast Addict. For this example, I have the only thing I have in my app is the Boyfriends level. I have four podcasts, the ad-free full episodes, the story-only episodes. Nothing in Sleep With Me Plus has ads except for the really old episodes in the archives. We got the story-only versions of the show, the all-intro, all-night versions of the show, and then the bonus episodes. So let's start with the bonus episodes, actually. So Saturday, a new Posty episode came out. It was one that Russell loved, and that came out. And that's in the bonus feed. You know, some people like listening to Posty Super Deluxe episodes during the day. Some people sleep to them. And, yeah, so that one is in the bonus feed. And then looks like we got a bonus coming out for Boar Besties and Boar Friends on Thursday of this week, which is April 15th when I'm recording this. And then we have another Posty Super Deluxe came out a couple weeks ago. That was a picnic lunch with Scooter. And that's in the bonus feed. And that makes just so much easier for those of you that don't like automate your playlist or anything, just to kind of build and choose how you want to listen. Let's pop into all intro, all night episodes. I know an all intro episode is coming out this Thursday. Last Thursday was Make Great Pets season one, part two, almost 6 hours. It's about the max length we can get and have a good file size. So that was like 7 episodes of Make Great Pets. April 3rd, all intro episode came out. And then we had March is that bonus episode. So there was another all intro episode. So that's in the all intro all night feed. And again, like so much easier, like these all intros. Is that what everything that's in there? 277 episodes split between all. So if you love all intros, I bet 200 of those are all intros, maybe even more. And then in the store, both in the story only episode feed and then in the all ad free feed, let's run through the new episodes. Bring It On week started last week. So we had 1254 was our first watch along where I watched half of the movie Bring It On. Wednesday was 1253, Ben Broughton, the Crayon Rambler. That was one of those episodes that had an intro that I said I should make an episode based on this intro. Went to make an episode based on the intro, and it went in an even another direction of what if there was an RPG game based on the movie Bring It On, which led me to figure out I never watched Bring It On. Let me learn more. Then I ended up watching Bring It On. Then April 7th was Alba Sabelix, like we're getting ready, big announcement. If I haven't made it anywhere, we're going to do 3 seasons of a crossover with Alba Sabelix. So that's cool. So that's something we're looking forward to doing. And that was episode one of that. Or that was the one we did originally. Then 1252 was the finale of The Great British Bake Off. And episode 10. Then Multiplex 5, Tiki Transistor Hut. That was a good one. 1250, one of my favorite episodes probably in the past few years, a Willy Wonka tour that came out of like some news articles about experience. And I said, this has got to be an episode. And that will be a series. I mean, like a recurring thing. Then Great British Bake Off, episode 9, Patissier. And Multiplex, episode 4. And then we're back to our last audio news. So it's everything. Again, if you ever need support, support at supercast.com is there to help you. Though if you're listening to this episode, I'm assuming you're not like, you don't need support, but if you do. And the other thing is like, yeah, this is my main way to communicate. I learned this on Patreon. Most people just don't read their emails from Supercast or from me. And most people aren't on our Discord or follow our social media. And so these messages are how the majority of supporters get their information. I do it in a sleepy voice because there's like, I put it at the end of the free show too. But this is a kind of key way, but these episodes are easy to skip, especially if you're just using one podcast app, right, and building your playlists from that podcast app. So, yeah, thanks, everybody, for supporting the show. Reach out if you have any feedback at sleepingmepodcast.com. If you need support at supercast.com. and good night.